Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Confused Breakfast Podcast. Do you remember the pure joy of a trip to the video rental store as a kid? The excitement of walking down the aisles, browsing the names and the artwork, and finally deciding on the movie you were going to take home with you? Sure, it's hard to beat the ease of the modern era and streaming platforms where you don't even have to leave your house, but there was something truly special about leaving Saturday detention, picking a movie out by hand, and falling in love with it when you got home. On this podcast, we revisit and dissect some of our favorite childhood movies from that magical era to see if they still move us the way they did as kids. I'm your host, Mike Schulte, and joining me as always, the basket case and the criminal, Sean Pryor and AJ Vince. How are you guys today?
Yeah.
I'm the basket case.
Well, it's implied by the basket order, case. But I'm just saying you can find it out.
Cool, man.
I'm criminal, huh? I guess I got to play some catch up here.
Criminally beautiful.
Yeah. You guys are really sweet.
Yeah. We planned this. Like Sean knew I was going to say that. Mm-hmm. So we.
You're the athlete. You're the athlete.
I prefer musician.
There wasn't one.
Damn it. There wasn't one. Well, of course, we were talking about a fabulous club. But before we get to all this, I wanted to tell you something special. Ooh. Today is our 13th movie review.
Whoa.
Our 19th total episode. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, man.
I hope you guys are having fun.
This is everything that I've ever hoped for. This is like on our other podcast, I'm Super Stoked podcast. You can go check that out.
You should check that out.
Mm-hmm. I love to dive deep into some movies, but, we usually cover, other things besides just movies. And, this is a good chance to pick one movie and go really, really, really deep into it. And it's, that's all I ever like. Like anybody that ever just talks to me randomly is usually about movies and yeah. I love it. So to do it and record it with you guys, it's really been really awesome.
Yeah. It's been wicked fun doing this show. I think you were asking, like us, right?
Or were you asking the audience? No, because they can't respond. Okay, so it's a point. Okay. Be like, hey, audience, do you like this?
That's what I assumed.
Just long pause.
I assumed you weren't stupid. I just, you know.
Well, it's clear that the audience is liking it. Yeah. Last week, we hit number 27 in the United States for film review podcasts.
Wow.
And we hit number 20 in Australia.
Whoa.
For film review podcasts. So if you're in Australia and you're listening to this, we want to hear from you.
No kidding.
Because we will come visit you for a tour.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yes.
You'll be number one on the docket. For us getting out there.
We're all almost vaccinated. We're on our way.
And with all that said, this is our last episode. So thank you guys so much. It's been really fun.
Our goal was to hit number 27. We've done it, and that is it.
Broke the top 30.
27 club, man.
Right, there you go. Oh, no. Well, so yeah, you'll either be listening to this in a few years and going, wow, like that was their worst point. Look at them now. They're world famous. Or this will serve forever as a reminder in time that we once kind of did sort of good.
We made an impact on something. Our name is out there some way, somehow.
Yeah. If it wasn't by the podcast, then it was definitely by TikTok. But yeah.
And speaking of TikTok, I think we got a lot of new listeners from TikTok. If you're not on there, if we've had a few videos get into some virality. The last one hit about 200,000 views, and it was basically just people making fun of me for saying military instead of military. So, I mean, you know, go check out the old TikTok.
Whatever works.
Yeah, Confused Breakfast. We're throwing a bunch of content up there, and if you're brand new to the podcast from TikTok, we're glad to have you.
Yeah, totally. Thank you guys.
But we also have another voicemail to play.
Ooh,
as you remember, we gave you our phone number. We said call 319-804-9596, and you let out frustrations. We had a guy call, and he was really mad at us for our Three Ninjas review.
Yeah.
This particular person was not mad at us.
Oh, cool.
Let's listen to this one.
Tell us how good we are, please.
Hey, boys, what's up? It's your boy, Vesh. I've known Sean and AJ since the Rapids days back in high school.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to say I love the podcast, and I'm excited for when the Beethoven podcast comes out, because that movie was a staple of mine growing up. Once again, love you guys. Can't wait to hear some more. So proud of you all. Keep kicking ass.
See, you don't have to be mad all the time. You know, like, we do get some things right. This guy clearly thought we've done some good things here. You know what I mean?
That's awesome. Yeah, I see him commenting on the social medias and everything like that. Thanks for listening, dude. That's awesome.
Very cool.
Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's nice to hear some love.
especially after that last one. Yeah, jeez.
We really got cornholed on that last one. And but yeah, some good positive vibes coming off of there.
Some thanks, variety. Dash. Yeah, some variety. We want some negative, we want some positive, we want some lukewarm. I don't know.
We just don't care. We just want you to call and leave a voicemail. That's really all it is. Yep. We're gonna take voicemails. If we accumulate a ton of them, we'll probably do a full blown episode where we just get drunk and listen to every single voicemail and try to respond to it. But for now, again, you leave us those reviews. But if you'd rather leave us a voicemail and be played on the show, call us up 319-804-9596. We'll take it all.
Angry and happy. He included a suggestion as well, and you guys can totally do that because Beethoven I haven't seen in forever and would be fun to watch again.
Yeah, great call out on that one.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely not Beethoven, a staple of our caller here, but this movie is a staple of many people around the world. The movie that showed us all that we have more in common with our fellow humans than we think. We are, of course, talking about 1985's The Breakfast Club.
And I gotta say, you guys, it's good that we're doing this now, because this movie is about to be canceled, unfortunately. we are this close, even though this is like probably a staple of just humanity.
Yes.
And should be, I think, is in the Library of Congress right now. It could be taken out of there, right? We don't know what's coming next.
We don't know.
What are they going to get next?
And we can go ahead and say that if we do say that we really like this movie, we're not endorsing any sort of bad
things.
That's right. We're just saying we like this film.
Correct.
As a moment in time. We're not endorsing any bad things.
No.
Was that even needed to be said?
No.
I hope it wasn't.
you never know. Somebody might re-listen to this in 20 years and be like, oh my God, those guys said The Breakfast Club was good.
Cancel Confused Breakfast.
We're already canceled, dummy.
Humanize the goons. We're the goons.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, as always, before we get started with the full movie breakdown, we're going to give you some pertinent, important background info on this movie that you can take with you as we go scene by scene. So, Sean.
You didn't do it this time. All right.
Sean by Sean. Breakdown.
The Breakfast Club. That's it. Go ahead, AJ. No. Produced by John Hughes and Ned Tannen. Written and directed by John Hughes. Cinematography by Thomas Del Ruth. Edited by D.D. Allen. Today. Don't know. Starring Emilio Estevez, Anthony Michael Hall, Judd Nelson, Molly Ringwald, Ali Sheedy, Paul Gleason, and John Capelos. Towards the ending of filming 16 Candles, Hughes asked Hall and Ringwald if they would want to be in The Breakfast Club. Ringwald was originally going to be cast as Allie, but she was very upset because she wanted to play the role of Claire, which saw auditions by Robin Wright, Jodie Foster, and Laura Dern, which would all have been fantastic.
Wow, yeah.
Emilio originally auditioned for John Bender.
Emilio!
Originally auditioned for John Bender, but Hughes couldn't find anybody to play Andrew, so Estevez was recast as Andrew.
Okay.
Which I can't really see Emilio Estevez being Bender.
Nah. I don't know. I think it would have been weird over the top kind of vibes.
All right. Nick Cage was considered for the role of John Bender, the last role to be cast. The role was down to John Cusack and Judd Nelson, unfortunately. Hughes didn't think Cusack was threatening enough to, so the role went to Judd. Judd stayed in character offset, going as far as to actually harass Ringwald to the point where the rest of the cast had to convince Hughes not to fire him.
Right.
Wow.
Like, he was really, like, method acting pretty much and just staying in character the entire time. And I think it was Dick.
Paul Gleason.
Yeah. Paul Gleason who said, like, who had to, like, tell Hughes, like, no,
this is good. Let him keep going down this.
Yeah. Right. But Hughes said that the film was met with skepticism because Hughes was a first-time filmmaker after 16 Candles. However, the single location and modest $1 million budget convinced the studio to go ahead with the project, which is just music to studio's ears when it comes to, like, budgeting a film. It's like, it's in one location. There's, like,
we just have to build it, and then we'd never leave.
Yeah, there's, like, maybe 10 actors. We just have to rehearse and rehearse and rehearse, and it's like a play. You just give us a stage, which is the high school.
Wow.
And that's music to any studio's ears. So, filmmakers out there, contained, like Saw, like, you know, the movie Saw, like, that movie got sold really quick because it's just a contained kind of thing.
Yeah.
Principal photography began on March 28th, 1984, and ended in May. Filming took place at Maine North High School in Des Plaines. Illinois for the interior. I mean, Des Moines.
Des Plaines.
I don't know.
I think that's actually Des Plaines. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why they call it different from Iowa. They just like to be different from us. I guess it's fine.
It's weird. Illinois.
I do say Plaines, that in my head, though.
Des Plaines, Illinois for the interiors. Exteriors were shot at Glenbrook North High School. The actors rehearsed for 3 weeks and shot the film in sequence, which is actually pretty rare for a film. Usually, like, for like budget-wise and everything like that, they'll pick a location, get all those scenes done at a location, then move on to another location. Or, like, if they are scheduled these actors these days, they'll get all those scenes done with them first. But with the budget being what it is and the location being what it was and the actors being who they were,
sense, right?
They just kind of went from beginning to end.
Well, we don't do it like that's how we film this podcast. We actually film it. We start at the end and then we go to scene one, and then we go to scene four, and then we just piece it all together.
When we have to move locations in the middle of that.
Yeah, yeah. We go to Mike's house first, then we go to mine.
We're always the first. Yeah, for whoever segment it is, that's whose house we record at, so they're comfortable.
It's for budgetary constraints. The film was released in cinemas on February 15th, 1985, and made $45,875,171 domestically, debuting at number 3 at the box office. And that is The Breakfast Club as far as right now.
Well, there's one important thing we need to tell you about. When we first started this podcast back in October, we had to decide exactly what day we were going to release episodes on. Mm-hmm. And we didn't just randomly come up with Wednesday. We knew that in about 19 episodes,
right,
that AJ's favorite movie, Confused Breakfast, was going to need to be talked about. And we figured we would release it on Breakfast Club Day, which is today, you guys, March 24th.
Today.
March 24th is Breakfast Club Day.
We've been planning this for like a year. Yep.
That's why this is our last one.
Yep. This is it.
It all comes down to this.
So like I said, this is AJ's movie. And, you know, before we dive into this, we always like to give a little bit of an insight into what everybody was thinking the first time they saw it, when they saw it, what their rating was. So, AJ, it's your choice, man. This is one of your favorite movies ever. Let's hear what that first experience was.
First experience was not good.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
How about that?
Wow.
This is something that I kind of grew to understand, because when I first saw it, I was really young. I didn't get it. It was boring. It was talky. It was
Nothing happens. I didn't
identify with these high schoolers, because I'm in elementary school, you know. Imagine that, like, you know, watching this as an elementary school kid. You just don't get it. Like, mm-hmm. You don't understand it. Like, those types of pressures that they talk about and they feel didn't exist in my life. So I didn't understand it. And then, so I think it's more important to say how I felt like the fourth time I saw it, okay. You know? But that's what it was. I was like, I don't get it. And then you see it, and like all of a sudden something strikes you. And I saw this on TV, and I was so mad every single time a commercial came on. When I was watching this movie, I was like so upset, because it would be like, you'd be like invested in this like emotional roller coaster, and then
the new puppies, the new charbroiled burger brought to you by Hardee's.
By Hardee's. Carl's Jr. Fuck you, I'm eating. Just like, okay, well, but that was like my first like real memorable experience watching it, and like being like coming around so invested in this movie. So I hated that it was edited, but it kind of didn't matter to me at that point.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So but I'll give you the average of that, and okay. I'll say like my average score was honestly like a 5.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Sean?
I was a kid when I first saw this movie. This was just like kind of a staple for my brother. Where I watched this movie a lot was my dad was married to someone who, and he lived in Illinois. He was married to a woman who lived in Illinois, and we all just like went up there to visit. And our step cousin, we would stay at his house just when my dad and his wife were at work and stuff like that. And we would just watch The Breakfast Club over and over and over again. And I don't know why we just liked it, and we liked Bender's, you know, isms and everything like that. So we watch it all the time. And, after that, it's just The Breakfast Club at that point, you know, like as you grow up, it's just like the movie, the high school movie that to define all high school movies. My thoughts about it when I first watched it was probably just like, it's a good movie. Just kind of like a lot of these other movies that we watched for the first time, you know, just like, it's a good movie. I like it. So probably around 5.5, mm-hmm. I'd have to say.
Yeah, I think that's really similar for me. I watched it probably junior high, maybe. So I was like, I was getting there, but I also just... like, I had a good home life. I was a fairly popular kid that didn't really have any enemies. So it's like, I don't get this. Is this what high school is going to be like? Because I don't like it. I'm neither of these people. But I was probably like 5. It was just a movie, right?
Yep.
It's just a movie. No big deal.
It's just a movie.
It's not a big deal.
No, it's not a big deal.
And we have to say, I think you're kind of underplaying this a little bit, AJ. This is your favorite movie.
Yeah. I mean, this is my favorite movie. So... For me,
I mean, we'll get to your review at the end and everything like that, but it must be said.
Yeah, it is my favorite movie. Now, favorite movies are a seasonal thing, but I think that this is just always one that is at the top. Like, it's just a not questioned for me, you know? If you ask me what my favorite movie is, I'm probably going to say this movie.
Okay. Nice. Yep. Gun to the head, like, you have to pick a movie.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Fine, I did.
There's some real contenders, but this is probably it, yeah.
Well, then, AJ, you get to do the honors like you always do. We like to talk about film reviews. We want to know what the critics and fans alike have been saying about this movie. Bold prediction, maybe the best rated IMDb that we've done so far?
Probably, I don't know.
By far, right?
I think it's up there. But it's still in the sevens.
It's still in the sevens. Christ. We haven't gotten out of that seven yet.
I will still give you the good old tomato meter.
We do go by that.
I like to start with it. 89% on the tomato meter. Certified fresh.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which I think means something in tomato meter.
I think it does.
What does that mean, Sean?
It just means it's just the staple of approval.
Well, yeah. Can I throw my thoughts on that? That rotten tomatoes are bad, but like it won't be a rotten tomato if it's fresh.
That's right.
So
right.
Then that means it's good.
It means it's very good. It means like
yes. So it's edible. So it's edible.
So are we talking about the actual?
We're talking about the actual tomato.
It's good.
Okay, good. Sounds good.
Fresh
guys.
Means good. Go, AJ.
89% on the tomato meter. So for like critical reviews, all that good stuff. The audience score is even better at 92%.
Nice.
So audiences love this movie, at least since the internet, you know, tomato meter and, you know, Rotten Tomatoes. As far as IMDb and kind of what you were talking about, highest rated, I think this has got to be right there, 7.8. out of 10.
That's pretty high.
I don't know if we've gotten out of the sevens going up, right?
I don't think we have.
I don't think so. We've hit an eight.
No, definitely haven't hit an eight yet.
Yeah.
We've had some fives.
Yeah. Metascore, I've been throwing that at us more recently, which is like the critical stuff of that you'll find on IMDb, 66. I decided that I was going to do some things a little bit differently on this one.
Oh.
Okay. Now, I wanted to start off with, like, kind of the good stuff from, like, the critics, okay? And I'm going to give us some bad stuff from the people.
Okay, cool. Okay. I like that. I thought you wouldn't give us any bad reviews, so I really appreciate that.
It's not that... That's the thing. Like, I think it's more intriguing on a movie that is, in fact, like, as respected or regarded like this. I think it's good to get the bad side of it. Because everybody else can be like, oh, I just identify with so-and-so and my high school experience, and I was also friends with the janitor. And it's just like, okay, guy.
Wow, that movie really nailed it for you.
Well... Brad Laidman from Laidman. Yeah, that's a great last name. He gave it an 80 review, 80 out of 100 from Film Threat. This could have been an unmitigated disaster, but Hughes's way with the material ensured it a special place in the heart of just about everyone who happened to be in high school while Ronald Reagan was president. So, like I say, a lot of good positive stuff coming through here. I like real views. James Berardinelli. And yes, I did say that right. Eminently watchable and consistently entertaining, it has a candor that is unexpected and refreshing in a sea of too often generic teen-themed films.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. 75 out of 100. So we got good stuff coming through here. Okay. Do you guys want to hear about what Raj said?
It's your boy, dude.
Gotta hear it.
Give us some Raj.
I'll give you a little bit about Raj. Okay. I won't give you the whole thing because he writes novels. I'll give it like I always like to start. I'll give you the start and I'll give you the finish, okay? The Breakfast Club begins with an old dramatic standby. You isolate a group of people in a room, you have them talk, and eventually they exchange truths about themselves and come to new understandings. William Sarion and Eugene O'Neill have been here before, but they use saloons and drunks. The Breakfast Club uses a high school library and five teenage kids, okay? So more or less comparing it to like the old Westerns, yeah. the saloons and like, you know, you kick it open, you have to walk up to the bar, you order my drink.
Everybody hates
you. Nobody talks to me because I'm the hardened man and everything. John Bender, that kind of a thing.
And he's also talking about like the Wild Bunch being secluded in like movies like The Thing that were inspired by that movie as well, where it's just like, and the Hateful Eight, 10 Little Indian kind of tales, 10 Little Native Americans.
Yes, please.
Tales where it's just like these group of people hold up in a spot and they have to learn to get along or they don't.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. The performances are wonderful, but then this is an all-star cast as younger actors go. In addition to Hall and Ringwald from 16 Candles, there's Sheedy from War Games, Estevez from Repo Men, yeah. Judd Nelson, not as well known, but his character creates the strong center of the film. His aggression is what breaks the silence and knocks over the walls. The only weakness in Hughes' writing are in the adult characters. The teacher is one-dimensional, one note. The janitor is brought on stage with potted philosophical talk that isn't really necessary. Typically, the kids don't pay much attention.
I don't know.
I'm going to disagree with that. Yeah, okay. I'm going to disagree with Raj on that one.
And that's why I like to see these things, yeah. because I like to see if you guys agree or disagree. He did make a note that he doesn't think that the R rating of the film, he thinks it really refers to the language more so than anything. And he thinks PG-13 would have been more suitable for this.
Hmm. I agree.
He basically says it's appropriate for thoughtful teenagers.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah. So let's give some.
Yeah, give us some negatives. I'm gonna give before you some negatives.
Let's get off of this.
Just all right? Get it on
we
there.
All know. Do yourself a favor. Don't watch it. Right? I don't know a human being. I don't know how a human being can like this movie. This is one of the worst movies I've ever watched. Terrible characters, terrible writing, terrible acting, an obvious message, cliches. Everything about this movie is bad. End.
Thank you for being a human being.
Thanks, man.
That's great to be on the same planet as you.
We have to have the enemy.
Yeah.
We have to have a common enemy, and I think that we could just point towards these people.
Yeah. I agree.
This movie doesn't deserve a star. That's what this person said. Granted, I grew up in the 1990s, largely opposed to the 1980s, but I can surely say this movie doesn't rate it at all. I agree it's colorful, but this movie doesn't even add up to the life. It doesn't explain it all and how high school works. The storyline is flirty with emotions, but so two-dimensional. Thank you for your brilliant writing as you critique John Hughes.
The 90s were so much better than the 80s.
So can I give you guys, to finish this off, it's the most useful, most helpful negative review found on IMDb for Breakfast Club.
I'm in.
Okay. All right.
A little bit longer, so I apologize. Warning, spoilers. Okay.
Whoa.
In 2015. Inexplicably hailed as a cult classic when I first saw this atrocious film, I was the same age as the main characters, but not, parentheses, but not the same age as some of the actors playing them. Judd Nelson looks like he's 26 years old. Doing this. It seemed empty and utterly false then, and 30 years on, it looks even worse. It's on TV right now. The characters are impossible to like or care about, and the script is arguably the worst thing John Hughes ever wrote.
He's currently watching it as he writes this.
He's like live tweeting it. Like, because that was big in 2015.
Yes.
parentheses. He never wrote anything good, but this garbage screams to be taken seriously without doing anything to earn the right. End parentheses.
I hate this person.
I know. Some people like this movie because it reminds them of Teenage Rebellion. I hate it because it has nothing honest or interesting to say about people of any age. No character says or does anything believable, and the hasty boy-girl pairings shoehorned into the final 5 minutes come out of absolutely nowhere.
I will agree with that.
The prettying up, this is parentheses again, the prettying up of Ally Sheedy's token weird girl to make her an acceptable makeout target is particularly baffling.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I
agree. This film has no insight, no truth, no entertainment value, and no point.
I disagree.
Everyone involved should have been given Saturday detention for life.
Wow.
Ooh, wow, what a ringer there. At the end. Ooh,
so you did pay attention in the movie.
So there you go. So, I that was the most helpful. It was 104 people found it helpful out of 159.
Okay.
Well,
you are validated. You are now recorded history.
There you go. Congrats.
Well, what do you say, boys? What do you say we break some rules, get sentenced to Saturday detention, pop on one of the most iconic songs from the 80s, and dive the fuck in?
Oh, man.
Here we go. On Saturday, March 24th, 1984, five students report to Shermer High School at 7 a.m. for detention. Each comes from a different clique. Claire Standish, a snobbish beauty. Brian Johnson, a brainiac. Andrew Clark, a wrestler. John Bender, a rebel. And Allison Reynolds, a shy girl with unusual behavior. They gather in the school library where Vice Principal Richard Vernon instructs them not to talk, move from their seats, or sleep until they are released at 4 p.m. He assigns them a 1,000-word essay in which each must describe who you think you are and leaves. John Bender, who has an antagonistic relationship with Vernon, ignores the rules and riles up the other students with discussion of school clubs. Vernon returns after finding the door closed and gives Bender multiple Saturday detentions moving forward. So it's become a bit of a mic thing after scene one is we discuss how this intro compares to the worst intro in movie history. Speed. not great. It was 2 minutes of just titles,
yeah.
But it had an unbelievably awesome song in the background.
Yes.
So therefore it beats Speed just slightly. Speed is still the worst intro of all time.
Absolutely.
This might be the most iconic intro of all movie cinema history in general. Is that a fair assessment?
It's the song, probably, right?
It is. I think a big part of it has to do with the song. Simple Minds, Don't Forget About Me.
Don't you forget about me.
Thank you. Parentheses. not actually written by that band, no. By the way. It was not originally written by them. And there's so many other people that were slated to play this song.
Yes, there was.
And these are the guys who ended up doing it. And thank God they did. I couldn't imagine throwing my fist in the air to any other song.
No.
So
Keith Forsey wrote it and it was performed by Simple Minds. Like you said, they were initially reluctant to record it, believing that it was just a throwaway song for a forgettable movie. They recorded the song within 3 hours and then completely forgot about it as they continued to work on their next album. After the movie came out, the band discovered that the song had reached number one in the US charts.
Like lazy to the point where like the la 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 la, yeah. They were going to fill in with lyrics later, but they just recorded it and they were like, fuck it. Put it out there.
Who gives a shit? Unbelievable.
Yeah. And I'll be honest with you guys. If you go back and listen to their other albums, I don't like to bash people who like their music and what they've really poured themselves into, but
This was a good song. This was you guys.
It is like a fucking great song though. Yeah. Like it can't be understated whatsoever the Replacements were originally going to do it as well.
There was a lot. Like AJ said, there was a ton. They kept this guy, Keith, just kept going to bands and like, I don't know.
I think
like a dope movie.
I think the woman from the Replacements, her like boyfriend or husband at the time was in Simple Minds and she gave it to them or something. I think that's right.
Trying to help my husband out. I'm trying to get him a good single.
So going back to like, you know, it's just boring shots and stuff, but it does like rewatching it this time, especially obviously, cause you know me, I never watched the beginning movies anyways when I was a kid. I loved watching those go through and you start to see a lot of references, you know, kind of foreshadowing almost to the stories you're about to hear about. You know what I mean? Like, you start to see a lot of the scenes. You see Brian's locker. You see Bender's locker. You see the locker room. You know, you see the bulletin boards about prom coming up. Things like that, you know? The counselor's office. All these scenes, like, in reference to kind of, like, where these people come from, or even, like, the day before, you know, potentially, in reference to Brian's locker.
Yep.
The quote by David Bowie before the glass breaks. Which I thought that might have been, like, a little over the top. But at the same time, you're just like, all right, that's
it. It ended the song. Yeah. It set the tone, and then it was gone.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the glass breaking today while I was watching it again, while listening to it while driving. I have a point to make about that a little later on when we get to that point. But Mike was mentioning earlier to me that the empty shots of the high school and everything like that is, like, really sets it up, like you said, really sets it up really nice. But it's also, like, I don't know if you guys have been in detention or anything like that, or just, like, went to a school after hours or before hours, but it's weird to see it empty. Is.
Yeah.
It's really, really weird.
It's very strange.
Very surreal, and just like, being in high school is just surreal, but that without people is, like, it's something that not everyone sees, I think. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's just, there's something weird to it for me.
One of those shots in Mike specifically for me is, like, the one of the cafeteria where it's just like the like vending machines and it's just, like, empty. And
yeah,
you ever go into, like, if you ever went into a high school and you just hear, like, the vending machines and, like, refrigerators just buzzing, and it's just weird to be in this loud big room with nothing going on. Super strange. Yeah, I agree. Very strange stuff, man.
Yeah. This opening as well, it just perfectly kind of symbolizes each character on their own without even saying really much or anything at all. When they all arrive, they all have their kind of quirks, and especially when Ally Sheedy's character, her name's Allison, she arrives and almost runs into Bender. It's like a perfect, like, it just establishes them perfectly right away.
Right before anyone's even really done anything.
Really,
You kind of get the idea of who's who.
Yeah. There's some really fun stuff in, like, the parents dropping kids off and, like, all that stuff. One of the most funny things is Brian's parents. That's actually his mom and sister.
Yeah. That's so cool.
And did you see their license plate?
No, what did it say?
E equals MC2. EMC2 equals MC squared.
That's pretty awesome. I did not notice that.
So, and we'll get to who picks him up. You're right. Like, Bender just walking, he just doesn't care. He's done this 100 times such before, a cool probably.
Walk. Such a cool walk. Oh, his head's in the air. Yeah, he doesn't care. He flinches a little bit, but not. Like, I mean, he was close. Ready.
I know.
He was close. Ready, but he said, no, I don't care. I mean, I'm going to keep walking here.
They shoot it really well.
It's really well.
It's really well done.
I hope that's a first take.
Did you recognize Andy's dad at all? I immediately, again, me being the guy that's like, I don't know the famous actors, but I'm like, oh, that was the guy in Ernest Goes to Camp. His name was Ron Dean. He was a B-list guy. He was in Rudy. He was in The Dark Knight as a detective. He was in The Fugitive as a detective. More importantly, he was Uncle Pat in Cocktail. The guy that runs the bar that Tom Cruise goes to, Uncle Pat.
Mike. Yeah, he has two lines in that movie.
Ron Dean, dude. I recognized him right away.
He is in Dark Knight.
Yes, he is.
He's one of the detectives that messes up or, like, goes after.
Yep, exactly.
Catches him in the bar.
There you go.
So is Anthony Michael Hall, you guys. Oh, he's in Dark Knight as well.
He is?
Yeah. He is.
Maybe that's how they got the role.
That might be. Maybe they're buds.
If writing an essay for 8 hours is anything to say, like, what were you guys ever in detention? Like, would you guys ever have detention? What'd they make you do?
Nothing. It was like what they said. You're there for zero pleasure, no talking, no nothing. You just literally sit there and do homework or whatever.
I had to do homework.
To us, it was homework. If you got homework, of course you got homework. You go to school here. Basically, you know? And so it's like, okay, you do your homework.
I mean, hanging out in the library for 8 hours doesn't seem like a bad time to me. Like, it seems like it sucks and everything.
It'd be worse if it was a classroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where my shit was.
Library, yeah. I feel like the library is, like, big and expansive. It's like you have your room for your mind to grow, you know. That, I don't know, maybe I'm just talking out of my ass.
Probably are, right?
A little bit. A little bit, Sean, okay? You're not exploring the depths of this library. You're sitting in a chair.
That's true.
By the way, kind of a dope ass library. I'm just gonna say
it was a dope library. Cool. Well, and that is a testament to many people that I've realized have gone to high schools that had like 50 people in their class, 100 people in their class, where sometimes a movie like this does not resonate, to be like, how do they all not know each other?
Yeah.
They literally have never like talked to each other or been in a class with each other, where there are these giant schools in the world where there are like 10,000 people that go to the school, and there would be a need for a giant library like that. And, and where you just have no clue who your other fellow students are.
I still don't know. Like, people will come up to me today. Like, I mean, not Jacob Beshwar, our caller earlier, a very good friend of mine, but people come up to me today and be like, hey Sean. I'm like,
hi.
Boy, yeah, hello. Like, trying to fish for their name, you know. Yeah. Like, can I see your ID?
And this is part of that really adds to it. Like, they don't go into depth a lot. This is one of those ambiguous starts to it. It's like they don't go into too much detail about who each one is right off the bat. They let you determine that with their clothes and their habits and like little tics and things like that. The moments of their parents dropping them off. They don't even describe like what grade they're in, nothing like that. Nope. So you get a little bit like as it goes on, but
we don't even know their names really either until the movie goes on.
It takes
right?
26 minutes to get into the movie before you even know their names.
Yeah.
So
actually, isn't it like 26 minutes before Allison even says a word?
That's right. Yeah. And she's told to shut up right away.
Shut up. You know what I really liked? The more and more I watch this movie, the more I like Bender's performance.
Yeah.
I don't think I necessarily liked it at first or just didn't care, but there were some specific moments where he did some really cool things, like when he was arguing back and forth with Vice Principal Vernon. And he does the no, so yes. Like I don't know why that just his delivery of that was so so awesome. And that's actually a funny joke that some of our listeners, some friends of mine, we always used to go stop. like we do that all the time. I love that. I mean, even that's really cool. Just stop. Yeah. You know, they're this whole first scene is where they're really showing their stereotypical characters. Yeah. You know, like you're learning who we think they're supposed to be in these first couple scenes.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the depth of the movie. Let people just some people like in some of the reviews you heard that they just kind of choose not to go into you can't go into it thinking you know people, because that's the trope. That's the pitfall of this movie, you know, is like if you just decide to, I already know who these people are, you know, and that's really what they're trying to get at throughout the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. They're literally showing you who you think they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
And like we all knew a teacher like Vernon, right? I mean, like I can picture a few where and we're going to get into his character a lot more later, but as an adult rewatching this is like, he was totally right about Bender. He said, I have it here. He said, spend a little more time trying to do something with yourself and a little less time trying to impress everyone. You might be better off. Yeah. That's, it is like so true.
It's just his whole approach.
Exactly. And that was such a cool moment, because he walks out the door and you see that instant regret of which they could have cut that scene. They didn't need to show humanized kind of version of Vernon, but he was all charged up and then he walked out and he's like, God, why did I do that? You know, like I shouldn't have said that. He could have easily been like a Strickland from Back to the Future where there's no depth to this person at all.
Correct.
But like, that's where I didn't like that review and we'll definitely talk a little bit more about Vernon, but I thought upon rewatch, like he had a lot more important things to do with this movie.
I wouldn't use the word sympathize, but I would something to that effect for Vernon on this time around, especially that moment right there. Like, obviously he's being kind of a fucking dickhead and he's the principal. No one really likes him.
Vice principal.
And the moment where he walks out and Bender says, fuck you to him is, I'm assuming like he doesn't want to be doing this. Like he doesn't want to be like this. He's just very fucking frustrated, you know? And And you're right. He doesn't want to be, he regrets saying that to him. Like he doesn't want to be acting like this. He just has no other way to show it.
Yeah.
And we'll get into it a little bit more.
There's definitely some more stuff we can talk about there.
Yeah. It's that barrier that when he walks through the door, he's got to turn it on.
Yes.
And he's like, I have to be this guy because I'm a man of respect. I have to earn their respect, garner their respect. I take their respect. And then he walks out the door. And when he's just dicking around in his office, he's not that guy.
Yeah. It's like he's sick of being that guy.
Well, even as a vice president of an entire school.
Principal.
Vice principal. of an entire school, which I'm assuming, like we said, was a lot of people. Mm-hmm. These five or six people are very, very intimidating to him.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to do, I would imagine. And so to try and like keep up this demeanor is very frustrating for him. Yeah. And especially with a person like Bender, it's almost impossible.
Right. Okay, so moving along, our first montage of passing time commences, and then conversations begin developing further. The kids start chatting about their parents, virginity, and weight issues. We are also introduced to Carl, the janitor, and the crew eventually makes it to lunchtime. The crew continues diving deep into conversations about their family life at home. Bender acts out, bringing Vernon back into the room. I really love Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah, I know of it.
I think I just like him in general, but in this movie, it was so great. Like, mm-hmm. his performance was awesome. And his slip-ups in his words, where mm-hmm. he would, like, double-say things to show, like, his nervousness, his extremely bad timing getting into conversations. And even, like, the physical comedy of, like, you know, he starts to move chairs and he goes, you will not move from your chair. And he slides back to his other chair.
Like when he's taking off his jacket and Bender's taking off his too. And he starts to put his back on. He's like,
he's like, no, it is kind of cold here. Oh, you're right. It's the shits, right?
Just and so this was, he had only been really in what? 16 Candles. So like he was eventually getting in like to some becoming a household name, but he was still just a very young actor that was just kind of figuring out. So I loved him in this movie.
He's so good. He's one of my favorites for sure.
I think it's like definitely one of the best performances in the movie. And you're right. Just all of his little tics and things that he does just like is what sets him off. You believe he is exactly what he is supposed to be.
He also said there was a lot of improvisation that was allowed.
Right.
And he did the thing where he said, his reason for having a fake ID was so he could vote. He said that was just improv. It was just an improv, just going.
What a great way to say it too. He's like, why do you need a fake ID anyways? So I can vote.
That was total ad lib. That was so good.
Yeah, I like Bender and just how he simultaneously just tries to dismantle everyone in the room.
Yeah.
And like if one's not working, he'll just go on to the next, and he's mostly trying to do Molly Ringwald, dismantle her, but also Andrew, obviously, who's just hot-headed and defensive, and you know, him just like the pecking order of like giving Anthony Michael Hall's character just like nothing. He's like, excuse me a sec. What are you babbling about?
it's automatic, the pecking order, like you just said. It's just established like that.
It's crazy.
It really defines, like, his character is really kind of the driving force of how things continue on in this movie. Yeah. Like, that's the continuation. True. He's what drives it right through.
In fact, if Bender had not been there...
Mm-hmm.
They would have sat in silence for 8 hours, and there would not have been a movie.
You would have.
I didn't think about that. That's very true.
If we're playing on that, I bet Andrew and Claire would have probably started talking a little bit. They're both kind of like popular kids and stuff. I think Allison would have sat in the back still, and Brian would have just continued to do his paper.
He would have done
2,000 words.
Yeah.
To try to, you know, like be himself.
So Bender in being the asshole and the chaos is what actually created order in that room.
It's 100%. Very, very true. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's some Jordan Peterson shit right there. Yeah, man.
You kind of start to figure out people's places, like what makes him tick, Andrew is this hothead. He's got this alpha complex going on, and then you get like Claire just doesn't even think she belongs there. She's above it.
She brings out her sushi. Yeah. Ain't nobody eating sushi in the 80s.
No,
okay.
No way.
Like, yeah, it was just like becoming popular right. in America.
I don't know. Give it a try. A lot of his little lines are just fantastic.
I love, you know? Andrew's, like, and they all have their lunch thing. Andrew's is like one of the funniest because he's just pulling out sandwiches and apples and bananas.
Carton of milk,
a whole bag of potato chips.
It's like a magician's hat, man. It's just like
But you knew every one of these kids at school. Like, there was the kid that always had just the giant bag of food. And, you know, like, you knew that.
Especially, it was always the jocks who were just like, I gotta have my protein, dude. You know, I gotta have my full balanced meal.
Get my macros.
Gotta get my protein.
There's a moment where he's holding his sandwich and like everyone's looking at him behind him. He's holding his sandwich and everyone's looking at him and he like looks behind him too, and then a piece of salad or a piece of lettuce and really it's like pure cinema. I bet John Hughes is like, that's it.
We fucking got it.
I saw that too. It was so good.
It happens a couple of times. Like, yeah, he's just trying to eat the sandwich and it's so full of stuff. And like, then you have Allison who just obviously, so what funny. Kid? This it's only all I could take it to be is olive loaf, the meat on her sandwich, like an olive loaf or something that she just whips back.
Bologna with chunks in it or something.
And you're just like Captain Crunch and the Pixie Sticks.
It sounded kind of good.
It does look kind of good.
Anytime a sandwich crunches, I am all in on that. Yeah. Like Captain Doritos Crunch on there.
Yeah, dude. I love how she's got like her whole entire routine. Like, she does this for lunch every day.
Yeah.
Like, and no one has noticed somehow. She's just like, she's got a process. She's like, I'm doing this, I have to get rid of the meat, and then I'll put the pixie sticks on, and then I'll do the crunch, and then that's kind of my favorite part. Yeah. And she eats it. Yeah. I love it.
There's a method to that madness for sure. For sure. You think they all loved getting Cokes from the vending machine?
I'm sure they did.
I mean, in high school and stuff, it's like, oh, cool, we get to have Cokes, not
vending machine. Right on. Swiss Valley, bro.
Yeah, right.
Didn't Bender like tossed a Coke to Allison and she just caught it?
So, like, little quirks like that in this movie, and it's like really only 80s movies that do this now. They have these like moments of surreality.
Yeah. Surreality.
To them like that. Like, he, like, that's not planned in the movie. Nope. Like, they don't know each other, but he does that and it works like that. There's a lot of John Hughes movies will do this too, and it's like we'll come up with coming up when we talk about like the dance scenes and everything like that, or just them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, movies don't do that nowadays. You know, they don't enter into that world of like surreality to just break up monotony.
Right.
And 80s movies did, and John Hughes did that very, very well, especially in like Ferris Bueller's Day Off and in this movie.
It's so good at showing how slow time moved back then too. Mm-hmm. Like, there are those moments, those bored moments where just showing, they show the clock, then nothing happens, then they show the clock and it's barely moved. Cause like, that was kind of, you know, when you were younger and you were sitting in school and you're looking at the clock going, oh my God. But now now I go to sleep and it's 5 days later.
Exactly.
I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Where's it going?
So we also got to meet Carl, who's going to play a very vital role later. But I wanted to give a quick little tidbit. Rick Moranis.
Oh, yeah.
Did you read that? That's was originally cast as the janitor. He grew a super thick beard and decided to play the character with a Russian accent. And he refused to ditch the Russian accent, and he refused. He had this like set of giant keys that he had hanging between his crotch as like a phallic thing, and he refused to change any of that. And John Hughes finally said, "No, you're
not." Like, Rick, I'm sorry.
It was producer Ned Tannen was like so opposed to Moranis, and they said, "This is not going to happen." I mean, that's really funny, but it wouldn't have worked.
It would have been too outlandish.
It would have been too outlandish. Yeah. Exactly.
This is a very grounded film for the most part, other than exactly what you just talked about, Sean, is the surreality of like these little things that happen that could very well happen, but at the same time they're not really like viable. Yeah. You know what I mean?
A Russian janitor with a phallic key between his legs.
Character like that being in this movie would be like way, like, I mean, I'm just picturing, you know, him in Ghostbusters, and
that's exactly what I was picturing.
So Bender and Andrew kind of come to blows in these scenes, but at first he does like the whole kind of reenactment of his family and saying like Brian's parents. You're a parent's wet dream, pretty much, which is really funny. But do you guys think what he was saying was real, about his family and the cigar burns and everything like that?
I don't find that there was any reason to it be for me to not believe it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't see why not. Like, he's like, well, he's got the scars to prove it.
Yeah.
You know,
I did read a theory, which I think I do subscribe to, because he does walk to the school. And I think he lives not too far away, actually. That's how I like to picture it in my head.
Yeah, he's just kind of around the corner. Like
pretty much right next to the high school in my mind. I heard a theory that because he racks up so many Saturdays, is because he doesn't want to go home to that again. And so he's there 6 days out of the week, you know, and just kind of chills out until he has to go home.
I do subscribe to that, because I mean, that him acting out that much, is he's looking for acceptance in a weird, strange way among everyone else by mm-hmm. being this cool, dickish character. You know, like I do, you don't never know what's really going on in people's lives, but I do kind of buy into that.
Yeah, I think I do too.
Yeah.
I think that's actually very, very valid, you know, and he's so particular about all the details of what do happen with his home life, mm-hmm. you know, the words that are said by his dad and how his mom chimes in and how they just go to blows about every other time yep. they get into it. I'll tell you what about, who you got your money on? You got it on Andrew? You got it on Bender?
Bender's got a longer reach for sure. And yeah. he's bigger, but he's got that trench coat kind of thing on, you know, that might.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who are you putting your money on?
Well, I don't know. It's prison rules or normal rules or like.
Well, Bender does have a knife.
That's true. Does he get to use it? As, you know, he does say, "I'd kill you," and he pulls that knife out.
I'm going with Andrew just because he's trained, and I don't think Bender is really a fighter at heart. I think he's correct. More of a lover.
I think you're right.
I think he's right.
I think it's a front.
And Andrew has that cheese ball line. He says, two hits.
Yes.
My fist, your face, and then you on the floor.
That's right, buddy. He's got all the lines that are just kind of terrible cheese. Like, it's just really bad.
I hit you, you hit the floor.
Yes. If you get me mad, you're totaled.
Totally.
Totally.
Well, he's been hanging around all the other jocks, and like that's all they talk about. They say these same things over and over, and so he's like portraying that in the real world, you right? know?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it might be Andrew for me. I'm just like, because like you say, it's not that I don't think Bender could like, you know, get his moves in there. I just think
he's very passionate.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, but I think he could. Regardless, Allison stole that knife anyways.
Yeah, right.
Plucks it right off the chair.
Yeah, I love that. I do kind of want to mention the fact that this movie might be canceled anytime, any place, anytime. The flippant use of the F word and the obvious sexual harassment going on with it does get to be to the point where it's just like, ugh. It becomes very uncomfortable when you start to side with Andrew, especially because he's trying to defend her.
Right. Mm-hmm. But essentially the just verbal sexual harassment, but then also the assault.
It's bad. Yeah.
I mean, that is an assault moment that would not be tolerated in today's society.
No, absolutely not.
When he's underneath the desk. Yeah. That's.
I think he says, sue me. After he does that, and it's like, well, she very well has a clear cut case that she could.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we'll say this often, like we do, but it's the '80s. Like that was just like kind of like that then, and like people didn't really really think about it twice. But in today's eyes, we got to mention it. But it was the '80s.
Yeah.
Well, let's move this party along. Let's go to scene 3. After Vernon leaves the room, the crew sneaks out of the library with Bender as he attempts to find his stash of weed, his doobage, as he says. On their way back, it is clear that Vernon might catch him, so Bender sacrifices himself to save the group. Bender is caught in the gym and taken to a different room in the school and locked in. As Vernon spends time in the basement with Carl, Bender sneaks out and ends up back in the library. The Scooby-Doo montage type thing where they're running through. That was very Scooby-Doo-ish, where you run in one door and you come out another door. And
yeah.
I mean, like, the school couldn't have had that many weird twists and turns. Like, it seemed, again, it was like Sean's point. It was that 80s just kind of
weird, whimsical. Yeah, whimsical, and it totally works. But if you're trying to be critical on it, it's like,
yeah,
okay.
and I love a lot of these scenes, or a lot of these shots of them running, like the Scooby-Doo montage is a perfect analogy for it. When they like are running into frame and Bender's like getting Vernon's getting like a drink of water at the water fountain, he turns exactly when they're gone. I'm like, God damn it. As a director, I'm like, fuck yeah. That's so money right there.
How many times they had to go through that.
Just the timing of that and everything.
It's such a good looking, montage of all these things that, and there's something very, I think they finally, like the reason this had to happen was, And they don't even explain it very well, by the way. They don't even really give much explanation. Brian's trying to find out, and he's just like, what are we even doing this for? I don't know. Well, are we, like, what are we going to go get? Why are we going to his locker? I don't know. And he's just like, if you keep asking me questions, I'm going to beat the shit out of you. There's no explanation that's really given when this scene kind of starts in, right?
It's very true.
Like, unless I miss something. But there's no real explanation that I could tell. And Bender's just on this thing. And for some reason, they all decide to go with him.
Mm-hmm. Monotony, dude. It's what, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock mm-hmm. now? Like, come on. This day is going on forever.
Mm-hmm. I do, to backtrack a little bit, I do want to bring up the scene where Brian is kind of telling Bender that he's like not a virgin, or trying to like tell him that he's, I've laid lots of times.
I've laid lots of times.
And Bender kind of gets him to sort of like imply that he had sex with Claire. And he brings Claire into it. I want to commend him for like just saying like I didn't do it. It was all just a lark to, I didn't want you to know I was a virgin and everything like that. I'm like, that's pretty commendable.
Yeah.
You know, like it was such a big deal. Was it a big deal for you guys and your friends in high school with like the whole virginity thing or anything?
Not really.
Yeah. Neither was it us. It was just like kind of what we see in movies though.
Yeah. I think it is what's one of those classic like high school things, tropes that you fall into that you're just like, that people think.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you watch TV today, like TV shows today,
they're all fucking,
they're all like, they might as well be in freaking middle school doing that stuff, man. It's insane. And so like, you know, you were talking about, obviously there are things in this movie that you just should not get away with. But then at the same time, at least you have those moments of honesty. That's like, no, I'm not. Okay. I'm not fucking. Okay? Yeah. We're not doing it and everything. And like, if you watch today, it's like, if you're not, you're going to get canceled off that show. Like you're going to get dropped from the show because your character's not fucking. Like, it's ridiculous, man. And so it comes up several times in this movie.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of it's like borderline refreshing.
I think so too. Yeah. That
it's not just about how much you're fucking.
Well, that's the beauty of this movie too. And obviously what you're getting at, the beauty of it is just breaking that down. It's just like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But as we'll see, it still kind of matters even when you fucking get out of high school. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, I'll get into it in a later scene with Bender or Vernon, but nothing really changes.
Yeah. The moment, sorry to backtrack a little bit, but I think it's important for future podcast episode. Brian's trying to like put out this fire, these fires that Bender's starting always, right?
Yeah.
And he's always trying to do it. And this is the point where you finally start to learn those people's names and whatnot. And like, he's like, well, he's got a name.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
Andrew said that, right?
Andrew says that. He's like, he's got a name. He's like, oh yeah? He's like, yeah. What's your name? He didn't know it either. And so, you know, he tells him his name and they're kind of going around the room. And that's how they kind of start to learn a little bit about each other. And there's a moment where it's like, he says, why do you always have to put him down? Why do you always have to get down on him like that? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to do that. And Bender says, I'm being honest. I would expect you to know the difference, you know? And I'll just leave that there. Like, he decides to bring that up and I'll ask you guys about later on, I think when we kind of get to the circle about some things about honesty and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
So they plant that seed and then they move on.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
okay,
yeah.
The basketball scene for me was really funny upon rewatch. <I know. laughs> Like, when, why does he have one tennis shoe on? Like, he had enough time to put like one tennis shoe on. And the way he was overacting that, and then like the fake like flinch of the ball.
One, two.
And then even like Vernon kicking the ball back at him.
Yeah.
I loved everything about that, because it was clear he was sacrificing himself for everybody else. Yeah. And Vernon pretty much kind of knew that, but he's just like, whatever, I gotta deal with you now. We gotta leave here.
Very, very dramatic sense of when they hit that gate, like in the hallway.
No!
And it's like,
like they couldn't see that from 100 yards down the hall that the gate was there.
Exactly. It's like, he didn't just turn the corner, I don't think so. And he's like, he kind of looks around, and it's like a war movie or something. And it's like, wow, now we're busted for sure. And it's like, no, just me. He's like,
it was a cool move.
It's a pretty cool move, I'll be honest with you. It caught the eye of Claire, I think. Yeah, so.
That was definitely a moment. And she had been kind of giving him the eyes, you know, he's treating me like dirt, so like I like him kind of a thing, which is very stereotypical. But like
bad boys, God.
Yeah, right. Like and then he keeps that bad boy image going further, and she's digging it. And then this was the final one.
Mm-hmm. Was marijuana that big a deal in the '80s? Because I know like
I think it was.
Another movie we're going to cover, it wasn't that big a deal at all, and it was like really just kind of in high school.
This is also thinking about one of the
because a
reviews
lot of
we had with like the Ronald Reagan, that's the war on drugs.
Oh yeah, really true.
So very well could have been a big deal at that point that he had it, you know.
I think that's very true. Yeah, because a lot like most of the characters when they go to the locker are kind of like, marijuana, that's what we came here for. And it's, oh god, you're gonna, and they call Bender like a toker, like a dope fiend and stuff like that. And
only burners like you get high.
Exactly. It's just like, really, people were that prude back then
I think it was just the eight. I think you're right. Like the other movie we'll do, it was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. And then I think they started fighting the image of drugs.
I think that's true.
With the dare and all that stuff, and it started bringing, oh, that you don't do that. That only bad kids do that.
Yeah, man, won't. Do you approve of this?
Again, it's an awesome performance by Anthony Michael Hall. I love it, man, so much. Like, okay, but in high school for you guys, how big were your lockers?
They were half sizes.
You guys had half sizes?
Yeah.
Half size, yeah.
You had half size? We had full lockers. So obviously I didn't come from a town as big as you guys, but we had full lockers. Now, we had a locker buddy, though.
Oh, okay.
So we had a locker
buddy. Shared lockers?
We had a shared locker.
So you essentially had a half locker.
But you had to decide who got the top cup in the middle. And then you had to both hang your jackets in the center. And then your locker partner always ended up having a bunch of bullshit in the bottom of your locker by the end, like of middle course. Of the year. So
I'm glad I didn't have a buddy, man.
Yeah, that was a big deal. Locker buddying up and stuff like
mine
that.
Mine was a shithole, man.
You burned some bridges if you weren't the same locker buddy as last year.
So. My locker buddy would have hated me, too. All my Jonathan Davis posters from Korn with his shirt off and his Adidas pants, man, they would have hated me.
Oh yeah, dude.
Yeah. So then he had the guillotine in there rigged up and stuff, and then like he graffitied it like with
Sharpie. That was probably just thick Sharpie, wasn't it?
Well, what did it say? It said something like kind of derogatory, didn't it?
It was like
you fucking die or something.
Yeah, don't open. Yeah, on Bender's locker.
Yeah, do not open or you will die. And then it had the F word on it.
The F word, yeah.
Because he should, because he's Bender.
Yeah, and nobody cared, I guess.
The guillotine rigged up was just kind of a silly thing.
It's pretty awesome.
Badass, but it's just silly.
It's him trying to impress people by being Billy Badass.
It's like,
right?
When did he have time to do that?
Yeah, at all his detentions.
I suppose detention, yeah.
Today in detention, we're going to do a home ec project with your locker. We got to talk about how important Carl is now, because this is after they've escaped and gotten back. Vernon goes down to hang out with Carl, right? I mean, they don't purposely hang out, but they end up hanging out. And there's that incredible exchange, which I'll read to you. Vernon says, I've been teaching for 22 years, and each year these kids get more and more arrogant. Carl says, bullshit, man. The kids haven't changed. You have. And Vernon says, these kids turn on me. They think I'm a big fucking joke. Carl says, if you were 16, what would you think of you?
Yeah.
And like, it's such an important thing, because for me, you know, like I hate when people talk about how they just, for instance, the Grammys were a few weeks ago. And people are like, Grammys are crap. All this new music, bullshit, crap. It's like, music has not changed. You have. Mm-hmm. And it's the same when you look at kids and you're like, oh man, these kids are just way different nowadays. Like, no, they're not. They're actually like, you're the one. And we'll get into it even later on how they bring that back around. But like, Vernon is someone that I can totally relate to the older I get. He used to be probably Bender.
Yeah.
Like, he probably was Bender. And then he thought he was all righteous getting his life together. But like, responsibilities ended up fucking killing him.
Yeah.
And turning him into a shitbag, you know?
Like, I was thinking today, man, like, if Vernon was Bender's age, they would probably party together. They'd probably get along. And if they could just like see past each other's bullshit,
right,
then I think they would actually learn a lot from each other. I would like to read this real quick, actually. I wrote this about what Vernon was saying to Bender. When Vernon is scolding Bender, you can see Bender seeing within Vernon that we really never grow. I think, like, because there's a shot of Bender when Vernon is like scolding him. He's like calling him like a piece of shit, pretty much. And he's using like, or no, he's like bending down, like, hit me, dude, hit me,
yeah,
hit me, that kind of shit. And it's just like, you're an adult. What are you doing, man?
Yeah.
Like, and you can see that on Bender's face where he's just like, really? Like,
yeah.
We just, you're acting like me right now. You know, like, is this all cyclical? Do we just like kind of repeat this bullshit? Like, do we never grow up?
He's learning that.
So you can see that on Bender's face. We really never leave high school. It's still the same shitty cliques and dick measuring contests in the adult world. Vernon says he makes $31,000 a year, but is still threatening a kid.
Yeah.
It's very smart storytelling with these characters representing different times in our lives, but still we are very similar. We are still young and rebellious and scared and anxious and depressed and confused and misguided. As Allison says in the film, when you grow up, your heart dies. Mm-hmm. It's the in between the communication we have with each other, that the realization that we are mostly not that different from one another at all, that like really should just keep us going. That whole scene really affected me and really made me relate to Vernon and see like what he sees, but also see like the bullshit of it. It's just like, you two are the same person. You're just from the totally different generations. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't see that. And that's the fucking problem with people today.
Vernon was 100%. Once Bender, and Bender will be Vernon.
Exactly.
And they still can't relate, you know?
It was a really great, one of the better pieces in that flick. They're locked in that room. They're locked away from the world. He throws him in there. You can see how much Bender just doesn't care, even though he kind of got what he wanted out of him. He wanted him to break, you know. He's only there to make him break,
yeah,
you know, to make Vernon break, you know. And he says he's like asking him to take a swing, and there's a point I remember reading that Judd Nelson was kind of afraid of Paul Gleason at this point because he thought he was really going to hit him. So like,
awesome.
Some of the fear you see in his eyes is real. Like, that's, it's real. Like that understanding. And so, but it is, I like that. I like what you've kind of read there and everything. It's really cool. $31,000 a year.
I know you did this
math, right? Do you guys know how much that
was? I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to say it's like 55 or something like that. Okay.
A little bit more. Do you have a guess, Ron?
No, okay. I have no idea.
$75,362 is approximately the $31,000.
That's what we make for podcasting.
That's absolutely.
Pretty good. So it's respectable.
Yeah.
You know? And he's got a home. So he's got some. He's building.
Does he have
equity.
A wife? Did he have a wedding ring on?
I don't. Oh,
ooh,
I don't
good
know.
Question.
That's a great question.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Feel like he's newly divorced, kind of thing.
Yeah,
which is why he's hanging
like
out
that.
There. God,
should be divorced.
Yeah, because he's
threatening
he's that
kids.
Age. He's makes $31,000 a year. He has a home, and he's probably divorced. He's like, because he doesn't want kids, because he deals with these assholes every
very
day.
True.
You know what I mean? So
what you're saying to Judd Nelson's actually thinking that he was going to hit him, like, that's him breaking character in reality, but it, also in the story, it's him breaking character, like,
wow,
breaking down his defenses.
Normally that
much.
Wouldn't have worked, right?
Exactly.
But it actually did.
Yeah.
Well, let's keep this party moving. We're going to move on to scene four. The crew smokes Bender's weed,
and they
continue to share stories and bond further. The students realize that despite their differences, they face similar problems. The group shares some very intimate and powerful stories. Brian shares a shocking story about contemplating suicide.
Allison's kind of background gets more revealed, mm-hmm. or her character does anyway, not necessarily her background, I guess, but... She like kind of comes out as being like a nymphomaniac, but not really.
She's just fucking with everybody.
What do you guys think about like them all kind of ganging up on Claire, trying to get her to admit that she's not that she's a virgin?
I think honestly is just like this idea of like, come on, like we're all doing this, like yeah. we're all kind of going through this, like we know each other now. You know, it feels like. The whole smoking weed thing and like going through that is like this breaking down the walls. The yep. walls are coming down.
Yep.
Like defenses are coming down. And like that's what that did. And like it's like, come on, we've already done this thing. We've done what illegal stuff now.
Yeah, yeah.
Be real with us. Come on, just answer the question. It's not that big of a deal. Whatever, you know. It's true.
She was so the too. Last one to like finally break down the wall.
Finally give
so
up.
They ganged up on her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a big deal, but like and I think it's kind of fitting for her character to be like confronted by it, like and yeah. not and like cuz I'm sure her friends are just kind of like they make up stories,
yeah,
you know, and
totally.
Like yeah, I did this with Ted the other night and it's like they really didn't, you know. And so I think it's kind of like a kind of an eye-opening thing. It's like it's not that big a deal, just who gives a shit.
It's like Mina Suvari in American Beauty,
yeah,
like where she's just the super cool girl who does it all the time, yep. and then she's actually mm-hmm. scared nerd that's a virgin,
yeah,
you know, like it's that same popularity definitely. Complex,
yeah. yeah. And think of how many times Claire has been confronted like this in her life
completely.
As the princess, you know what I mean? She's just Miss Popular. People agree with her. Gets what she wants. How often does she ever get confronted like this?
Yeah.
That's why it's so hard for yeah. her to answer, you know?
I loved stoned Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah, man.
Because you know what it immediately reminded me of the minute when he was like talking and he's like hey man, what did it? Yeah. Do you know what that reminded me of? Yeah, Weird Science,
weird
right? Because it's the same way that he acts when he gets drunk at the bar yep. in Weird Science. Yeah. So then I had to know. I go, well, which one came first? Both those movies came out in the same year.
No shit.
February 85 was Breakfast Club and August 85 was Weird Science.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that like the Weird Science director's like, hey, just do the
do
same
some
thing.
Of that.
Just do kind of what you did on Breakfast thing. Club.
That's great.
Chicks
yeah.
can't hold their smoke.
Chicks can't hold
That's
their smoke.
That's what it is.
Apparently he's like quoting a Richard Pryor bit.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So and in Weird Science he's kind of doing a black voice, but anyway,
well,
it's
yes,
it is the 80s.
Of course, the 80s. Yeah. 85 particularly.
It really starts to pull people out of their shell and everything with, especially Allison, who almost like, she's an outcast, she's the outsider and stuff. She kind of almost now wants to get in on that. And by the way, does it ever show her smoking weed?
No, she does not smoke the weeds.
Yeah, so... Hmm. So that's the other thing is like, you know, she didn't really get in on the action. However, she's an observer.
Yeah.
She's like watching other people kind of do what they're going to do. And she kind of fits herself into these little pockets and places
yeah.
until it's time for her to just reveal her own secrets. Well, and
have
stuff.
You heard the fan theory about that?
No,
this is not a Mike fan theory.
Okay.
There's a theory that Allison made this whole thing up and that she was the only one in detention. Which explains why she never actually smoked the weed because there was no weed,
okay.
right? It explains why they got away without like outlandish thing, like the ceiling broke,
oh,
the glass breaks, there's smoke, weed smoke all over the place. It explains that like she basically just came up with this all in her head because she's clearly kind of like a crazy person,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and that she just is inside of detention, just making up stories about friends she doesn't have.
Huh.
And she's using cliches because she doesn't know anyone.
Sure.
So wow. she's just going, well, that's what the athlete would act like. And then that explains the makeover and
yeah.
How all of a sudden she's got a boyfriend who she yeah. had never talked to anybody until that day.
Kind of a popular boy.
Yeah. So that's pretty outlandish fan theory, but it's there.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I call that the fifth wall. It's not the fourth wall because it's like, it's this character playing their own God.
Yeah.
Because it's so far outside of what the actual, what it is, what a story is. It's, I'm just creating it and now you're watching it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Crazy, right?
Oh man.
Wow.
Yes.
So, Andrew's story, him taping up the what's his name, do we know,
Larry Laster's buns.
Yeah, that's right.
One thing that really affected me and like really got to me was Brian's reaction to that when he says it. He's like, that was you.
Yeah.
And the look on his face is just like, there's history there. Like there, like that didn't just affect Larry Lasseter. Lasseter.
Yeah. I think it's Lasseter.
That didn't just affect Larry. It affected his group of friends, you know, which includes Brian. He's like, yeah, you knew him? He's like, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
It seemed like it kind of devastated him. It seemed like it kind of devastated Brian. Like, I'm sure, like, if one of us came to one of each other and be like, dude, someone fucked me up, you know, like, he'd be like, shit, man.
He's just getting to know Andrew in this way. And like the walls have come down and all of a sudden he finds out that he just did this to a friend of his and it paints him in a completely different light.
It does.
I bet that's like almost, that's very scary.
And I'm assuming like, cause he's like, that was you, that his friend group has just been like kind of trying to guess who it is because I'm assuming Larry didn't tell anybody. Yeah. He's so embarrassed. And like Andrew says later on, he's like, I'm just picturing him going to his dad and him telling him what happened to him, you know.
That's tough.
It is very, very heartbreaking, that whole thing. But very human. If Emilio Estevez came up with that is a brilliant story. Yeah. And really humanized everything about him to me, for sure.
Right.
As a kid watching that, and like, let's say it was my fourth time when I finally started to get things right, it forces you to think about how your actions don't affect the one person. Mm-hmm. It affects so much beyond that.
Yeah.
And that is why I think it's such a big, like, powerful movie, is because of how it makes you think about other people. And like you said previously, how they're just not different from you much at all.
Yeah.
So it's one of those eye-opening scenes that you're just like, God, like you, like, I don't know if you can watch this and just be like, it just opened up my whole world.
Yeah. I mean, and people who say is like, don't watch the movie, you can't relate to any characters. Like, there's five characters who come from completely different backgrounds who all have a different story, but who all are in the same kind of position. It's just like, that's the world, man.
At one point in your life, you can relate to every single one of those persons.
Correct.
And that again, so then Brian tells his super moving story.
Yeah.
Where it opens up the group's minds, where the rest of them are going, they've alluded to it so many times, where like, how could you be mad about anything? How could your parents ever be mad at you?
Your life is perfect.
Yeah. Just cause you're smart and you're, but like, no, it's not actually. Mm-hmm. There are things that I don't have that you have that I wish I had. Even though they'll seem to make headway, then they'll start fighting again.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Right. Yeah.
It seemed like that was the moment where they finally like went,
whew. Yeah.
Because then after his story, they talk about, well, what's going to happen on Monday.
Yeah.
It's a shocking story, too, because it'd be totally different today. Obviously, for obvious reasons. Like, it would be, he wouldn't be there. He'd be kicked out, for sure.
Yes.
Because any bringing anything like that to a school, barring what happened, you know, it's a very different story today, which is very heartbreaking, too. But in that case, too, they all kind of laugh when it's... when it turns out to be a flare gun or whatever, but it's still, it's just like,
I was going to say, is it, what do you guys think? Is that funny or is it still?
They needed funny because it was so intense. Like, you know, when you laugh at things that really aren't funny, but you're like, cool. Like, can we move on to something else? Cool. Yeah. I think that's probably what that was.
I think there's even a moment where, like, you know, Brian is, and he poured himself out over this, you know, and he's like, he's talked about the pressure, and it is, you know, when you're good at something, you're pressured to be better than just being good at it. And when you get better at something, you're pressured to continue to do well. And he saw this as his, even if I get A's the rest of the semester, it's still a B. I'm not an A. I'm not what I was supposed to be and everything. And that also alludes to the fact of like, when you're that age, the world is that high school. Mm-hmm. The world is that small, you know, that it, the world is that B that you're going to be, you know what I mean? It's just so, it's so much smaller than what the world actually is. Yep. And, but unfortunately that's just as far as your scope is. Mm-hmm. And so he goes through this whole heartbreaking story, and it is, it's just, it's like detrimental for him and like really breaks him down really hard. And so I think after that, you're right. They need this, like, they need this kind of laughing point. And he says, there's a flare gun. It's like, it went off in my locker. And I think about just all of a sudden a locker exploding. And at first you think, Jesus, was that a bomb? Was that an attempt? Was that something like that? Yep. And think of like what Vernon went through in that moment. And that's why he knows Johnson so well. You know what I mean? He's like, sit down, Johnson. Just, I've already had to deal with enough of your shit this week.
That makes sense. Like, that does. Is that why Carl knows his name too?
Maybe that's why Carl knows, because he just had to clean it up. He just came in for the library.
What's up, Johnson? Oh, your dad work here?
Hey, Brian. Your dad working? And so it's like, it starts to really like draw to light like a lot of things as to why he's so well known amongst, yeah, not probably because he's such an academic and he becomes to the belongs, yeah, to those clubs. It's because he's a flare gun went off in, yeah, his locker.
Yeah. And what, and who the fuck does that?
Where do you even find a flare gun?
And
dude?
Where do you, yeah, find a flare, you know? And so then he comes back around and Andrew's trying not to laugh and Bender's just like, come on, it is kind of funny. And there's like, they all start kind of erupting, and he's like, I guess, yeah, the fucking elephant was destroyed. You know, he kind of gets in on it too, and it's that, as sad as that moment is and how like devastating it is, how like almost traumatizing, it's like he it's this moment where he realizes, you're right, it's, yeah, it is funny.
He wasn't gonna attempt that.
Yeah.
No. It was just a dramatic a gesture, I think. Yeah. And I think they realized that.
Right.
And it being a flare gun is just like, come on.
Yeah. Yep.
The realization that like they probably won't be talking the next coming Monday or whatever. What do you guys think about that? I know, Mike, like you said in high school, you were pretty inclusive with everybody who kind of came along. Were you guys like at all clicky with anybody? Like, just like friend wise, would someone come around and be like, be nice to their face, and then when they walked away, be like, oh, I don't actually really like that kid. Was that kind of a thing in high school for you guys?
Well, that's the problem, right? Is that they won't be able to explain, like, Andrew won't be able to explain to his friends why Brian is cool now.
Yeah.
He won't be able to do that. So he will treat Brian with a better attitude and will just try not to be a mean guy anymore, but they're not going to hang out.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm, it's not going to happen. I don't think that's the way I viewed it. Cause that's still high school.
Yeah.
And you can't, the approval of your 20 closest friends are more important than Brian's approval. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have a very good vibe for the future for them, but I also think they've learned enough to be better people, but I don't think like they're going to be best friends.
I agree. Unfortunately, yeah, like especially in Claire's, like a lot of what she said was very profound. We're just like, you don't know how hard it is, all the pressure that I have on me. It's like, it is very true, but also everyone has this tremendous pressure on them. They're in fucking high school,
right?
You know, what Bender says is just, it's not you're not a bitch because you won't just say to his face right now that you're his friend, but like you're a bitch because you won't have the guts to admit to your friends that he's an actual nice guy.
Right.
You know,
therein lies where the seed I planted earlier of Bender saying, I'm being honest. I would expect you to know the difference. I'm being honest. He's being honest about the fact that, yeah, although he's not saying it in a nice way, Neo Maxi's
Zoom Dweeby.
Zoom Dweeby. That, yeah, I am not saying it in a nice way, but it is the truth,
mm-hmm,
to Bender.
Yeah.
That being said, it comes back around, and Bender calls Claire on it now, and what sounds very hypocritical, you know? And you're just like, it's like, well, you just, you were bagging on Brian earlier. You're being an asshole earlier, dude. And then it comes back around. It's like, and he says, it's like, no, it's not because it's because, you know, it's a shitty thing to do.
Yeah.
That's why it's terrible that you, that's why it's not honest. You're being honest about it. You're being shitty about it still. Yeah. You're talking about the future. I'm talking about like past or what it is, you know? So it's like in the future, you're choosing to be that way.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's shitty. Yeah. And that's deep. Like
it is.
It's very deep. There's no way out of that, right?
This is a deep episode, boys. I'm sorry.
It's okay. A lot less jokes on this one.
Let's liven it up with the dance scene, okay?
Yeah, I want to dance.
So, among a dance scene, now that we've established ourselves as great friends and we resolve this, we get a dance scene. Claire gives Allison a makeover, which sparks romantic interest from Andrew. Claire decides to break her pristine, innocent appearance by kissing John Bender. As the detention nears its end, the group requests that Brian complete the essay for everyone. Brian leaves the essay in the library for Vernon to read after they leave. As the students part ways, Allison and Andrew kiss, as do Claire and John. Allison rips Andrew's state champion patch from his jacket to keep, and Claire gives John one of her diamond earrings, which he puts on. Vernon reads the essay in which Brian states that Vernon has already judged who they are using stereotypes, and that Vernon is crazy if he thinks they'll tell him who they are. Brian correspondingly states that each one of us is a brain, an athlete, a basket case, a princess, and a criminal. Does that answer your question? He signs off the essay with "Sincerely yours, The Breakfast Club." Mm-hmm. John is last seen raising his fist while walking through an empty football field.
Hey, 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 hey!
Oh, it's so good.
Iconic.
To backtrack just a tiny bit.
A little bit.
The preamble to the whole circle scene when they're getting high and kind of having fun and looking at each other's bags and wallets and stuff like that. They also kind of embody like every stage of being high, different kind of people like being high is like when they get high, it also shows the different levels of high that high people can get. The stoic hangout type, the goofy as fuck type, the truth teller type, and the how the hell do you have this much energy type when you just smoked five fucking bong rips, dude. And with it, with that being Andrew screaming and breaking the glass. Sorry, that's all I had.
No, John,
I think it's perfect.
John Hughes had later stated his biggest regret about the film was making the breaking glass happen after the Anders, which for me was like, I hated that part, but you know, at least John Hughes admitted it.
That and maybe the breaking glass in the very beginning too. But
that brings me to like my kind of thing about Vernon is like, we're all Vernon and Bender. If there was a mirror, they'd probably see each other. So I'm thinking that's like kind of like a mirror,
right?
Holding like them, their younger selves up to like the older generation, or like maybe the older generation seeing the movie, having that mirror break and seeing the glimpse of what these kids go through is exactly what they did. That's kind of my thing of the mirror, or like the glass breaking in the beginning, but maybe it's a little stretch, but
yep.
Yeah. The dance scene was a big deal, and I'm sure, I don't know if you guys saw this too, but it turns out like Molly Ringwald was supposed to do it. She was supposed to be the dancer. She was going to dance. So
all
this
by
dance
herself.
Scene by herself. And she was nervous to do it. So they decided that everyone was going to get in on the dance action. And it did add to this kind of like you're talking about, like that surreality, that surreal vibe of like, why is there a dance happening? But then it's kind of fun. Like, I think it really just, it does. Like, how do you come off of the scene? Like,
that
we as a movie film review comedy podcast can't even take onto a joke. How do you break that up?
Like, dancing.
And so it makes sense.
It's perfect. You know?
I liked Molly's dance too.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really cool dance. And apparently she's like, I don't like my dance. I'm like, I thought that was a really cool dance.
Yeah, that was a good dance.
It was a weird movement that I don't even think I could do. But
I feel like you should, that's what they should have modeled the Peanuts after. So I'm just saying, it would have been a lot better. The Peanuts would have been a lot better.
Go,
Charles,
man.
Schultz. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
But the whole dance scene, I think it just shows us like this buddy, this camaraderie, this like new, like lease on life. It's the rebirth of this group.
Yep.
They've become the Breakfast Club now. Mm-hmm. That's what I think that this really signifies. Like, it's not the circle. It was this. This is now their rebirth. You know.
I agree. It's the perfect like 80s move to after a huge like kind of heavy scene to just put a dance number. And
if Footloose has taught me anything,
exactly. I think it could have been anything. And as a dance scene, it's I think it's just perfect. And to that song is a cool song too. Like, yeah. And then so we get Bender kind of sneaking back to yep. his like locker.
Yeah, just storage
janitorial closet yeah. thing. Yeah, and then Molly or Claire comes in and does a whole kiss thing and everything like that. What do you guys think about that? What do you guys think about them getting together?
You mean
potentially even hooking up.
You mean, did they do it?
I mean, what? Yeah, well, that. And also, how do you feel about it? Like,
it's not going to work.
It's not going to work for one. I think I do agree with whoever said it that it's kind of tacked on. And
we could, this movie could have ended after the heavy stories and then showing them kind of bonding as friends, and then they could have left.
Yeah.
It was not needed, but it also was, I did like it though. Like I liked the final scene, not necessarily the, Allie getting made up and then Andrew taking a liking to her, like, eh, whatever, or her going to the closet and making, but like their parting ways at the end was very awesome. I did like that a lot compared to how they all came into the school and now how they're all leaving the school.
That's true.
It's like that magical, it's that high school mysticism, right? Like where one day could seriously change, alter the course of your life, right? That like magical. I mean, they are completely different people. Now it might not last, but definitely I won't. Did might not prop definitely won't. But I did like that part, but it did feel forced, right?
Yeah. Honestly, I would have even been okay with them just kissing at the end and not do the closet scene.
Right.
Like maybe just like even just like a peck on the cheek or something like that, you know,
to inspire like, well, maybe.
Yeah. I think that would have been a little bit better for me.
No, we're dating.
Yeah, exactly. No. Yeah. On Monday, we're going to tell everybody and scream at the top of our lungs. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. You know, I think it was just like this one moment. And I think if it's like, cause we all know that it's probably not going to work out. And so with that aspect, it's just to have them just kind of like that question mark of like, maybe, is good enough for me.
Yeah, I like that.
I think that Andrew and Allison, very viable.
Okay. Yeah.
Very reasonable. I get the whole like, oh, I'm going to do a makeover. And then like, then he's like stricken by this.
So she's all that moment.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's your first, you know, slow-mo entrance. Congratulations. Yeah. Golf clap. I think it's still like, she still played it up really well. You can still see she has, this is a credit to Ally Sheedy and her acting in this, is she still has those awkward girl moments, like just like accentuating her chin and like now she's speaking her thoughts and emotions rather than just letting them sit inside and lashing out randomly. And so it was a good, like really good, like transition. And she's like, still very the shy girl and everything, but her looks don't personify that. So I thought that was really good. I do agree about it's like, so Claire's breaking the rules now and she's going to the closet and stuff. And so I don't know, the whole kiss on the, he does say like, wouldn't I be outstanding in that capacity of pissing your parents off, basically.
It does make sense.
So, I mean, I guess that's maybe what they wanted to solidify, or that just kind of helps solidify it. But yeah, it's like, I do like that. That's a good point, Mike. Like they went in separate. A lot of them just came out together.
And it was noticed their parent, all of their parents looked at them different.
Yeah.
When just in a matter of 8 hours, they were like, what? And you know, like Allie's going to be able to get in that car. And she probably hadn't said a word to her parents in years, and now she's going to get in that car and be like, listen up, bitches.
That's right.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, like they all have changed in some sort of a way to where like life's going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe for a day, maybe for the rest of their lives. It's going to be a little bit better all because of that.
Did you guys see who Brian's dad is?
No.
Is it John Hughes?
It's John Hughes.
Yeah.
Really?
John Hughes is Brian's dad who picks him up.
Cool.
Yeah. That's his own. He usually does his own little cameo in his movies. In some way, shape, or form, if he can work it in, he'll do that. And that was his,
that's really nice
little thing in that he put in there.
He's a fucking genius.
Yeah, he is. But yeah, I don't know. That's well, they're all going away, and he walks across the football field to lift his fist in the
and
air.
And you know that was improvised?
Yes.
The fist? He said,
that's right.
He told him to play around with a few things. He was supposed to walk away, but that freeze, I hate freeze frames.
I know.
But this one worked.
I know.
This one worked for me.
It is the fucking punch in the air period to the movie, and we all feel it. I feel it.
Yep.
Like, it is just like, whoa.
Bender, you remember like that the first time like you meet a girl and that energy cannot be changed, like cannot be created from anything else other than the excitement of getting in a relationship and just being like,
when I feel like that moment too, him walking away and like just putting a period to the day, even, is just like he came away with something, not even just Claire, but he came away with like
diamond
earring, bro.
some diamonds, some that fucking rock, dude.
Yeah, that's right. They married now.
I think he went in with a purpose a little bit, or he didn't even know that he went in with a purpose, but he came out with a thinking that he might have changed some people, and that now he has changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because like we were saying, without him, none of this probably would have happened.
No,
and so. Yeah, him being like the kind of chaos that they all needed, I think he kind of feels like some sort of accomplishment.
Yeah,
honestly. Mm-hmm.
Well, should we get to these modern day reviews?
I think so.
We let AJ go first, or do we let him go last?
Last, please.
Okay, then I'm going to start it. Okay. My modern day reviews. They're despite the things that would not exist if this movie was remade today, the stereotyping, the mental illness, the bullying, the sexual assault, derogatory dialogue. This is a snapshot in time. Like, mm-hmm. And that's what you have to appreciate it for. It should not be canceled. It is a snapshot in time. It would totally be different. It was recorded nowadays, but like, this movie hits everyone. It hits teenagers. It hits 20-somethings. It hits 30. It hits me in my 30s, and I feel like it hits people in their 40s and 50s because it just reminds you of what it was like to be a teenager and like have important things that you were dealing with, but not being able to see into the future yet of what it really was. But then knowing what you know and knowing you don't want to be like adults, still becoming an adult, mm-hmm. and then looking back on teenagers being like, God damn it, I wish I could like try that over again. Like, here I am. It's so good. It's so good. I think there's some issues with it, but at the same time, like, it is an important lesson in like being a human being and learning to live as a human. So I mean, I was a 5 or whatever. I think it's like an 8.5. I mean, I thought it was awesome.
I 100% agree. I think the notion of this movie being like in the Smithsonian or something like that, or like the Library of Congress is completely warranted and apt because it just does not age. And truthfully, neither do fucking we.
Yeah.
You know, it's there, like people still as 40-year-olds, like my mom, we used to work at Quaker Oats, and she said it was just like fucking high school. I used to work at Norsham, and it didn't change. It was just, we were just making money, you know, it seemed like high school again. And it's just like, we just don't grow out of it. And, we just, like I said, we just got to kind of find these people to relate to kind of overcome this bullshit, to overcome this like insecurity, to overcome this fear of growing old. And I think that's what Vernon is really the epitome of, is he's scared. And so is Bender, and so is all these other people, and he doesn't realize that they're scared too.
Everybody's scared.
Everyone's freaked
being
the fuck
human,
out.
Being a human, dude.
having a fucking house is scary, I imagine. You know, like bills and shit. It's all fucking bullshit, but the in-between is where it's at, and that's what this movie shows. It's a fucking 9.5 for me.
Yeah. Okay, AJ's gonna be like, I hated it, it's a 2.
Nowadays, this movie just doesn't hold up. No, this is a movie that I can find and put on at good points in my life, at low points in my life, whatever, you're feeling up, you're feeling down. And you're right, like it takes you through this roller coaster of emotions that just just takes you back, you know, and it makes you, it kind of just, it helps, like, almost like, it's almost like a reset button for when, like, your stresses in life, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And, to be able to watch it and to be able to look forward and not backward, you know, even though, like you say, this movie never ages, and it just, it makes you think about what is honestly some of the, they call it the best years of your life, and it's some of the hardest years of your life because you're trying so hard to get through it yeah. unscathed, and it's impossible. And so, and you watch it happen, and they force these things and these interactions with people who don't belong together, apparently, and then make you realize that people are just not different. Even the adults in this scenario, they're not different. You just happen to ex-nay them even harder because, and you don't want to listen to them because you don't want to hear it. You know, the quote in the very beginning from David Bowie says that the kids are very aware of what's happening to them, mm-hmm. you know, and they are very aware. However, I do think that it's one of those reminders that they're also not aware of the world around them.
Yeah.
And so it's one of these movies that is impossible to not be emotional about. Obviously, if you just listen to this entire podcast episode, I think that's apparent. Yeah. And so I don't know that anything could ever be a 10 out of 10 because I still find like my little issues here and there.
Always.
So I'm going to go at a 9.8 for this
movie.
Does
it still retain the title?
It still retains the title.
Nice.
It's a damn beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's an emotional episode, boys. That's about as deep as we've gotten so far.
Bam, ba-lam.
Now let's move on to Three Ninjas Kickback.
Yeah!
Hi-ya! No, we're so glad you stuck around and enjoyed this episode. As of recording this in mid-March 21, it is available for streaming on Peacock. So give it a watch. And continuing with the weekly content, tune in next Wednesday as we bring you another amazing-filled mini-bite episode. We're going to tackle one of the quintessential scary kids television shows of the 90s. We're of course talking about Are You Afraid of the Dark? We know AJ is. And in 2 weeks,
yes.
we will be back reviewing classic movies, heading into a group consensus pick in honor of the upcoming release of the brand new Mortal Kombat movie.
What are we doing?
We're going to discuss the original Mortal Kombat. 1995. We might get some phone calls about that one.
I hope so, goddamn it.
Liu Kang. So give us a call, 319-804-9596. Let us know what you thought of the episode. And AJ, take it out.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode, along with all the other episodes, and rating and reviewing us on the platform that you're listening on currently. You took a moment, you reviewed us, you wrote something down, you gave us that 5-star, and then you even stopped for a second, you clicked pause, and you called us.
Wow.
What number, Mike?
319-804-9596.
Thank you so much for doing that and giving us a call. We really appreciate it. You're probably listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, Stitcher, all the great podcast outlets, and all the small ones, too, that we just didn't mention. But make sure you also join in on any conversations we have along the way with Facebook. It's just facebook.com/confusedbreakfast, Instagram @confusedbreakfast, Twitter confusedbfast, and of course the ever-growing TikTok, where we get to throw all of these fun little tidbits at you on a regular basis.
Hell yeah. How about that? You can find me, Sean Pryor 237, on Instagram and TikTok, and that TikTok, if you want to see some me licking the camera videos, just get on there and let me know.
I don't know anything about licking cameras. As I've said before, you can find me anywhere on social media, AJAYVENS. I also have my Linktree up and going because I discovered that and I think it's really cool. Linktree, AJVENS, AJAYVENS.
Linktree is the bomb, man.
It is.
I would like to not be silly, and I would like to tell you I am officially endorsed by Collision Drumsticks.
Ooh.
So go buy some drumsticks.
Heck yeah, dog.
Look at that.
Okay, well, sincerely yours, The Confused Breakfast.